Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, July 26, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Becky Worley.
Behind the board is our luminescent producer, Eric Lanigan.
Oh, I'm shiny.
That was chosen by the chat lights. Room. That was a chat room request.
All the lights in here, yeah.
This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day along with you, try to make some sense of it all. And this first story about Facebook reveals that people aren't signing up as fast as they used to if they're a certain age.
Well, there's been a growth slowdown. So Facebook had absolutely epic numbers of folks who were signing on. And then from May to June, major change. In May, 7.8 million new signups.
Uh-huh.
And in June, 320,000.
Wow.
That's a huge drop. But
that's just from 18 to 44.
Yes.
Now, do you think that is an effect, and this is the question, right? Do we think that's an effect of people hearing all these privacy stories and these people canceling their accounts and getting out of Facebook and other folks saying, you know what, I don't want to sign up for that. I don't want to give them any of my information.
Well, this may also be a statistics question. So we're crunching the numbers, and what we're talking about specifically here is signups, new signups. So I think anyone who is a late adopter and coming to the Facebook party late, they may have heard about some of this stuff, and it just gave them pause to hold off. You know, when we had Quit Facebook Day and Leo quit Facebook, we didn't see a mass exodus from Facebook. So this is really looking at a specific subset of new subscribers.
I think it does show, though, that folks that are 18 to 44 are definitely less enthusiastic about Facebook. I mean, they make the point in this article that any service as popular as Facebook is going to hit a point where it's saturated and people aren't going to sign up. But what's telling about this is that 13 to 17 year olds and even 45 to 65 year olds are still signing up in growing numbers. It's only the other folks that are growing negative. And that's what makes you pause and go, wait a minute, this just isn't an overall trend of people slowing down because everybody's already signed up.
This is not just an anomaly or a blip. There's some root cause here. And I wanted to point out, too, that when you look at the Facebook demographics, 18 to 44 is almost 75% of the user base. I mean, we're talking about a lion's share of the folks who are using this. And a lot of this data came from inside Facebook. And I just have to go back to this issue of a root cause and quote them because I just find this humorous. One possibility is that we're finally seeing the backlash from heavy media attention to Facebook privacy issues, some of which were real.
Some of those privacy issues actually were privacy issues.
Oh, my God.
Of course, there are a bunch that weren't. But, yeah. And there are. There have been. And there still are real privacy issues with Facebook. And I think that's having an effect. I think people are saying, you know what? I just don't want to deal. I know you've got new controls. And I know that there's things. But I've heard all of these scare stories. I've heard all of these things where you change people's privacy information. I don't even want to get into it.
I don't think this is overall Facebook fatigue. I think this is an anomaly as a result of that media coverage.
Now, another story that could be overblown that we want to discuss here is Apple says only a small percentage of iTunes accounts were compromised. We talked about this yesterday, that there was a developer who was gaming the system by using hacked accounts, allegedly, to drive up the number of purchases of their apps. And Apple says only 400 accounts were compromised.
And the worry here is that someone got inside of the iTunes walled garden that's supposed to be a protected environment and scam and spam free, and that they were using basically, as you described, hacked accounts to get into people's. But they say only 400, that's 0.0003% of the 150 million people who are using iTunes. And Apple says in this instance, it's just minuscule.
If you believe Apple, then that's nothing. That's 400 accounts out of however many millions there are. A few. That's the number of people who have really bad passwords. Right. That's probably less than the number of people. So they did some dictionary accounts, found some people who had cat, dog, 123456 as their passwords and got into their accounts. And that makes sense. Now, when you think about the math, though, if there are only 400 accounts hacked, that's max 400 apps that could be bought. How did that drive up all of this developer's apps into the top 100 of that category?
You know, the problem is we don't have all the information. And the other thing I'd point out is that this is specific. Those numbers are specific to this one developer, Thad Nguyen, who has been since banned from the App Store. And the question is, if it happened with him, how many other instances have there been? And we even got an email here to TNT a couple of weeks ago. This is from Spartacus. A couple of weeks ago, I awoke to 4 receipts for iPad downloads in my inbox. I don't have an iPad. And many of these games have titles in Asian scripts. I've never given my iTunes, my card number until a couple of weeks before. So he canceled the debit card, and he really worried about how somebody got into his account. And I think that the bigger story here is, how big of a problem is this in terms of fraud and how many people's accounts are being hacked?
Yeah, I imagine, just my guess, is that it is the same amount as you would expect in any password protected instance where you have credit card account information.
So it's comparable to PayPal or Amazon.
Yeah,
fraud.
It's people who just aren't following the best practices of security through ignorance or laziness, probably ignorance more than anything, and picking insecure passwords. And so it's easy for somebody to just run a script that runs through the dictionary, and anybody in there who's got a dictionary word as your password, you're likely to get hacked. It's not a big problem of Apple in particular. It's a problem of any system where you're allowing those kind of passwords to be chosen. So, yeah, should companies have better security methods? Should they say, hey, you know what? You can't use dog as your password. That's a dictionary word. It's too easy to guess. You know, let's give you a little. Yeah, sure. But Apple's not alone in that. Everybody should have that. Apple has said that they're going to require you to put your credit card's identification number. What's that little
CRV.
The CRV number in more often. That just sounds annoying and doesn't sound like anything that will actually prevent this from happening.
You know, one interesting little sidebar of this whole conversation is that we got an email from someone. We were talking about using one way to protect yourself is to just use iTunes gift cards.
Right.
Now, one person said that in Canada, they couldn't buy apps with the iTunes gift card. They had to actually have...
I've heard of that. There's certain gift cards, if you buy it, they're only good for music.
Right.
And so I think there is a way to gift apps or give somebody a gift card that can be good for apps, but you should, I don't know the details on that. We should check into that.
That was one interesting sidebar. And then the other was someone said, if you just use a gift card and you take your location off, you don't pay sales tax on iTunes.
I'm suspicious of that.
Really?
But yeah, maybe. I read that email and I was like, you know what? I want to check into this and see if it's true.
So if you didn't have
especially when it involves taxes.
Right, because we would never want to upset the IRS, the federal government, or any tax collecting body at all.
Absolutely not, says Eric Lanigan.
Tax cheater.
He's not worth it. He's not worth investigating. Just leave him alone, will you? Bluetooth 4.0 has been approved.
I was worried for it.
The latest version of Bluetooth. That's pretty cool. Hold on there, Ms. Skeptical. It's a low-power version of Bluetooth, so you can actually run in low-power mode a Bluetooth device on a watch battery for a couple of years.
Yeah, anything that's got sort of reaching out to find other devices and networking, that's just a big power hog. So this is a big innovation. And I thought one of the interesting things is that you can actually have this within one device. You can be transmitting to other Bluetooth receivers within the device so you don't have to wire it.
Yeah, you could get rid of some of the wires inside, some of the circuits inside, especially in larger devices. That could be a big deal. The technology could first make its way to watches, smart meters, pedometers, and other gadgets that run on those little coin cell watch type batteries.
Well, and I know when they were talking about that, of course, I jumped immediately to medical devices because, you know, a wired medical device is what we're all looking for. And if that was something that wasn't dependent upon Wi-Fi or had some sort of receiver that could run over a WhisperNet or some sort of cellular data network, that would really change the way that a lot of people get monitored.
Yeah. You know, there's a certain kind of battery you can buy that you can pull apart and it's full of those little watch batteries. And it's actually cheaper to buy that than to buy the watch batteries independently.
I did not know.
I can't remember the type of battery, though.
We're full of incomplete knowledge today.
Yeah. I'll have to look that up. I did a video about it once on CNET. It's a good hack. You just pull that thing apart and then boom, you have like 10 watch batteries.
You know me, I love saving stories. So always bring me your savings.
Yes, exactly. Well, I ripped it off from somebody else. Anyway, Bluetooth formally adopts low power standard. Devices should be seen later this year.
Cool.
And big competition for Zigbee, by the way, if you're interested in the
right.
Zigbee
the
Alliance. Now Bluetooth 4. Bluetooth 3 brought in the Wi-Fi, so you could do the high-powered long distance. So you know, Bluetooth could incorporate some Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. Now they're going after Zigbee. They can't be stopped.
Oh, how will I ever raise my electric blinds?
Judge Rosemary Collier, who's overseeing the Far Cry and Steam experiment cases, these are the cases being pursued by the U.S. Copyright Group, has ruled once again in this case that it's like Eric and I have had this discussion before. We can't remember which parts are part of which cases because there's like 30 different elements to this case going on. They're all part of the same case. But it's a ruling now that says that Time Warner only has to provide 28 IP addresses per month.
So basically, the movie studios and folks who are going after P2P file shares are making request after request to get IP addresses linked to real people's names and accounts. And they are flooding all of these cable companies with data requests. Now, they're also saying we also get hundreds, sometimes thousands of requests for really pressing issues of child pornography, missing children, things that are coming from law enforcement agencies where it's real criminal cases, and that they have to put those first, and it's just too much manpower.
Yeah, they can't possibly accommodate all the requests. And so what Judge Collier said is, all right, a minimum of 28. You got to give us 28. Give us more if you can, but we're not going to make you reply to all these. Well, they just filed a case with like 5,000 IP addresses here. It's going to take them a long time at that rate. I mean, obviously not all 5,000 are part of Time Warner, but, you know, all the other ISPs are going to be saying the same thing. Like, yeah, you know what? We can't be turning these over. Not to mention the fact that this gets skimmed over in a lot of these stories. An IP address is not a personal identification.
It's just a computer, and who knows who was using it.
It may not even be the same computer all the time. IP addresses can be reassigned. And can be masked and can be assigned to a router, which is then broadcasting Wi-Fi, and somebody else is using the same IP address. You know, 20 people could be using the same IP address. So,
bottom line, if you downloaded any one of these movies and you're a little nervous right now, it's going to take 3 years to do all the lookups of the IP addresses before you even have to worry about starting your legal case.
Before you have to worry about it, yeah. You will have to go to Washington, D.C. to defend yourself, though. They didn't change that part of the case. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Slingbox lets you watch your home TV anywhere you go so you can resist temptations to download things that you shouldn't because you've got it all there on your DVR and so you can get it across the universe. Well, we haven't got a galactic IPA yet, so across the world.
They have the internets out there.
They're starting to get it. So on the space station, I don't know about the bandwidth, but you might be able to use your Slingbox. But more importantly, you can use it while you're traveling.
This is an experiment you need to figure out.
You could have used it today to have the audio from the World Cup streaming in your car while you were driving, and then you wouldn't be like this right now, worried about being spoiled. Of course, you could have used AM radio too, but you know, you could have done that. I'm not going to spoil it. Don't worry. Anyway,
is it over? Did he stop talking about the World Cup? Okay.
On any portable device, iPhone, iPod Touch, via Wi-Fi, Blackberries, laptops, MacBooks, and now Android mobile phones, you can get your home TV. You go to Best Buy, you buy a Slingbox, you hook it up to your television, you hook it up to your internet, you can watch your television wherever you go. To find an in-store demo at a Best Buy near you, visit Slingbox.com. On to the great JavaScript benchmark battle. This has been going on for a while. People saying, oh no, iOS 4, Safari is the fastest mobile browser out there. Android fans have been quibbling with that. Well,
great. Are you going to tell me who won this battle now?
Do you not want to be spoiled?
Do you need to
cover your ears?
No JavaScript spoilers.
Were you going to watch the benchmarks at home later? Do you have it on your DVR?
No, I do.
Well, I'm going to spoil it for you. Google's Android mobile operating system blew the doors off of iOS 4.
So it wasn't even a good game.
No, it wasn't even close. Okay. This was like the Netherlands yesterday.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You've seen that one, right?
I did. Okay.
Okay, good. The sun spider test where a lower is better because you want it to be fast in milliseconds. Android 5,795.2 milliseconds versus iOS 4, 10,902.1. I should hasten to point out Android 2.2. This is the Froyo on the Nexus 1 versus iOS 4 and the iPhone 4. And then the V8 test. Where a higher number is better, Android 2.2, 287 to iOS 4, 67. And they say this has to do with a new way that JavaScript is handled in Android that converts it to native code on the fly, so it runs better on the metal inside your phone than it did before.
How many people do you think really notice performance on and speeds? And when you moved to the iOS 4 and to the new iPhone, you said it didn't blow you away the way the change from 3G to 3GS did.
Yeah, it didn't. I don't think there was as big of a speed improvement. There was a huge speed improvement from 3G to 3GS. It looks to me like people going from 2.1 to 2.2 are going to have that same experience where they go, wow, this stuff is running crazy fast.
Because, so this will be the Android G Whiz moment.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, for everything, not just web browsing, they showed a 2x speed increase in almost every app, everything you can do.
Mm. Yeah, because the apps are written in Java as well, so mm-hmm. Or JavaScript sometimes. Mm. Twitter's got to make some money.
This is brilliant, I have to say, on their part. They have a new strategy for creating sponsored information, and what they've done is created the @Earlybird account, which allows you to opt in and sign up to follow @Earlybird, and they will then put information about time-sensitive and, in some cases, supply-sensitive sales. You could equate this to something like United's Twares that they have, the time-sensitive sales that the airlines do.
I was thinking Woot.
Well, Woot, but... It's
like Woot on Twitter.
Yeah, but even Woot can be, unless it's a Woot off day where it's like, boom, they just go through the lots as fast as they can. I mean,
right, you only get one a day or
right.
a couple
so
of
these
days.
Could be, and that's the thing with the United sales. They can be an hour, they can be 4 hours. And so this could be something that's really dynamic.
So what Twitter's doing here is they've got their own account called Early Bird that then they sell space on to people to provide deals.
And
so they're making money off of these folks by getting you to follow their account. So Early Bird will become a suggested Twitter. They'll use all of their Twitter juice to get a lot of people behind this, following it, I mean.
They haven't had a single tweet out except for the initial explanation, and they already have 15,000 plus when I checked before I left home.
It's I haven't started following them.
You should. I mean, would you follow them? Just, I mean, I'm a deal hunter, so
I'm going to follow them because of this story, because I want to follow it and see how it goes. No, I would not. If I weren't doing this job, follow them right now until they had put a few deals out. And I might go remember to check back and go, those deals look any good? Because I don't want a bunch of stuff cluttering up my feed. As it is, I'm going to follow them now. I'm going to see what the deals look like. And if I'm not interested in any of these deals, I'm going to unfollow.
I think they've been very judicious about how they choose information and sponsored stuff to put into your feed. And I think this is a good opportunity for real value for the consumer and an opportunity for Twitter. I see this as a win-win.
Of course, they do have to keep the site up
for people
to be able to get the deals.
Yeah, they've had a few, I mean, obviously overcapacity issues, but in order to keep the site up, they have to pay the bills.
Yes. Well, it's right. They can't add more capacity if they can't pay the bills.
Yeah.
Well, they can. They got a lot of angel funding. But eventually, they can't add more capacity. If they don't
and,
make it.
I mean, it's been interesting. The technical problems have been fairly considerable this last few weeks. I mean, they've been over capacity a lot because of World Cup. And then I've noticed on a lot of the different apps that I use, I just cannot get in. And the app replies were all screwed up for a while.
Yeah, well, with the apps, they were throttling the number of requests they could make per hour, which has always been limited. But they before it was something in the 500 range. They brought it down to like 170 something. They brought it at one point down to like 70 calls an hour.
Wow.
So if you have an app, you might want to look and see if there's a setting for the app that says let the API request be managed by the app, because then they try not to make too many.
Right.
But if you don't do that, then you're in control. And every time you click, every time you touch your app or click if you're using it on your laptop, you're calling the API.
So basically you run out of API calls while you're not even using the device. And
either way,
to
it's
chat.
Slow.
It's painful.
Foursquare is launching something called Location Layers. They're going to have two members initially, according to this ReadWriteWeb article. IFC is the biggest and Huffington Post. And what it does, when you check in on Foursquare, if you've added a layer, you'll get hints from IFC saying, hey, members of IFC really like the pub down the street. You might want to check it out.
Right. And that being the International Film Channel. So you'll know, hey, other film buffs like me
right.
really like this coffee shop as opposed to that coffee shop. And I always hate to be the naysayer of new social media technologies, but I'm going to do it anyways. I don't really get Foursquare because I never leave the house. But I think if you're a 20-something looking to meet up with your friends or someone traveling on business, it makes sense. But I haven't really seen a value add. This does make sense.
Have you not gotten the, like, hey, if you check in here, show us and we'll give you free extra sprinkles on your ice cream cone or stuff like that?
I think that if you look at the time, like I always take, like something diverts my time, an ad or an offer. It diverts my time. How much am I saving?
Yeah.
And my problem with location-aware advertising or location-aware anything is it hammers you when you need it least.
But
when
I'm waiting in line. I'm not doing anything. And then I just check in, you know, and then all of a sudden it says, hey, look at that. I got a coupon. Now you've saved 15%.
Fair enough. Or
if you become the mayor of your local pub, you get a free beer every like 10th check-in.
I haven't been to
now
a pub
I'm
in years.
Now I'm talking your language. I know. You got to get outside. They use Foursquare.
I know. No,
that's the biggest problem.
Listen, I get it. Foursquare works for a lot of people and they love it. And it's very social and location aware, smart. But this is a value add that makes sense to me.
IFC did something cool where they pulled their users for tips and then put those in their layer. And I think that's interesting because you could say like, yeah, I'm part of the film buff crowd and this is what they like. I would also like to see more juried layers that are applicable. Like Huffington right. Post, again, that's going to be a community play. If I am a left-leaning, you know, liberal Huffington Post reader, then I'm going to want to hear what other liberal crazy people say, too.
But since you're a John Deere ride,
right.
overall wearing righty.
I'm going to have to wait for the Drudge Report to come out with a layer.
Also, if you're a tourist in any city, you can walk around and look at where you are, and sort of the whole town becomes a walking tour. You know where everything is and what it means, and I think that's really cool.
I love the idea of it, but I'm waiting to see the actual application. Let's just put it that way.
I want to see it like I'm a Food Channel subscriber and I get the Food Channel layer and I'm in a foreign city like New York.
Like the New York.
I said foreign city that I was going to use New York. I'm like, I'm in one of them foreign cities like New York. And it says like when I check in, like, hey, one of our top five top chef contestants from last season has his restaurant around the corner. Okay, cool. Yeah, now I want to know that. I want to go and I want to make a reservation there and eat there. So I can see where this would work out. All right, our final story today is a sad story from a man who lives not far from our Petaluma studios. George Lucas wants to force a laser company to stop making new high-powered lasers. Why would he want to do that?
Oh, it's too much like,
Star Wars?
No, but there was something in the Star Wars that the kids used with the Force.
Oh, yeah, that one kid was dancing around with it. Yeah. The lightsaber, yeah. Lucasfilm Limited, actually, we don't know if George Lucas even knows this is happening,
just
has sent a cease and desist letter to a Hong Kong-based Wicked Lasers because they have a product called the Pro Arctic Laser, which looks a little like the hilt of a lightsaber.
And it has a laser coming out of it.
And it does have a high-powered laser. It's actually kind of dangerous laser if not used properly. They've changed how they ship it now that it got popular because they were afraid of people hurting themselves with it.
How do they ship it now?
They put an extra lens on it so it reduces the power, and then you have to remove that lens to bring it up to full power, but they just didn't want anybody accidentally.
Well, now
like,
it explains why Lucas went after them. Because any laser that could actually damage someone is so cool. It's going to be wickedly popular.
And and because it looks like a lightsaber, people are going to start waving it around.
It does. Look, it shows a continuous beam if you're watching the video.
Yes.
And listen to how dangerous this thing actually is. This is on their website. It says accidental eye exposure, even diffusely scattered from a wall, floor, or other flat surface, will definitely result in instant retina tissue damage within just milliseconds of exposure.
Yeah.
Direct eye contact with the beam or reflected will cause instant permanent damage and blindness. Sometimes blindness may take a day or longer for the onset. It's possible that such exposure could cause retinal denigration and even loss of vision later in life. And it goes on to say, I mean, this thing is, why would you want this thing sold at all? It says the laser is 1,000 times.
It's actually meant for industrial purposes. The company that makes it didn't want it to be a popular item that you order out of the ThinkGeek catalog. They were like, this is a tool. This is like selling a chainsaw, you know? You don't just buy it to play with.
It just happens to look like a lightsaber.
Yeah. They said, like, look, it happens to look like a lightsaber accidentally. We didn't make it that way. We don't want it to look like a lightsaber. And they haven't even responded to Lucasfilm Limited. They've said, look, you have no case. We didn't do this on purpose. We've never used lightsaber. The fact that it accidentally looks like an imaginary product that you came up with. This is an elegant laser pointer for a more civilized age. You can't stop us from selling it.
If you point it at your skin, it does cause skin cancer. That is on their website.
Wow. I like that these are not any may cause. It's like, no, you're going to get messed up.
You will go blind. You will get cancer. How are these things legal?
Well, because the way a chainsaw is legal. Same thing with a chainsaw. Right. Applying a chainsaw to your arm will cause your arm to come off. Don't do that. That's the laser pointer. This is a tool. This isn't like for playing with your cats. This is a real thing.
Poor cat hairless and blind.
It says, in addition, this laser must never be used to play with your pets. It says that right after the blindness and the cancer.
There you go. See?
Wow.
At least they know how stupid humans can be. All right, let's move on and see what's on the calendar. Becky?
Alrighty-ho. Well, I have one little item that's kind of interesting. I was talking to the folks at HP about their email printers. These are the printers that will have an email address associated with them if you buy a network-capable printer. And this is going to be a firmware upgrade, and they're going to make it come out. This is going to come out hopefully next week. I think this is cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this. I think it'll be really interesting.
Next week. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Amazon's Graphite Kindle DX now shipping. That's a little adjustment there coming out.
Yep, we expected it today, and it's happening. It's good.
And user interface arriving. A new overhaul of Firefox 4 beta, which has a pretty cool user interface.
Looks a little Chrome-like.
Yeah, it's also kind of Microsoft Glass, the frosted look in the tabs.
Yeah, actually, I downloaded it for Windows today because the Mac and the Linux versions are not quite up to speed on the look, but the Windows version is really well done to fit into Windows.
Yep. It'll have a lot of the bells and whistles from some of the new WebM. It'll have one of the cool things about it is that it sort of sandboxes the open tabs so that if you have a crash in one, it won't affect all the other. So final little calendar item, Google greenlighting a crowdsourced film project. So the idea is July 24th, they want people to document parts of their day from all over the world. They're sending cameras to parts of the world where they think there may not be folks running around with flip cams and video-enabled iPhones. And they want you to upload your video to YouTube. They'll pick the best submissions and make a little documentary.
You know what? That's a Saturday, and I will be at Comic-Con. We should do like a TWIT submission.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I like it.
And they'd like have a meetup at Comic-Con and film it and submit it to this.
What's the most extreme thing that one could expect to see at Comic-Con?
Princess Leia metal bikini. I don't know. What do you mean, most extreme?
Well, visually, I'm thinking like a TV producer.
Oh, yeah. How about this? I saw at Dragon Con last year. Guy dressed up in the alien suit, fully articulated, automatic alien, tail moved and everything.
That would be cool. That's a good video. Find that dude.
So we need to get that guy to our meetup. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is good. This is good. I like it. So anyway, July 24th, you too can submit your video and might be part of this. I think what they're doing here is cool because there's been a lot of this like, Flickr took a bunch of photos and then made a book out of them and this is a day in the life. But this is them saying, we're going to take all these submissions and then we're going to have some experts at film edit them into a documentary.
Right.
So you get both the crowdsource and the expert treatment. I think that's where you really have magic is when you combine those. Take that, Keen. Amateurs and pros can work together.
Tom has an agenda.
All right, on to our voicemails. 260-TNT-SHOW is our number. Give us a call, why don't you? 260-TNT-SHOW. Makai has given us a call, and here's what he had to say about self-driving cars.
Hey, TNT Show, this is Makai. And what's this talk about the slow boiling to self-driving cars? When do I get to get into my car with my breakfast, sit down, have it drive me to work while I eat, and watch my favorite TV shows so that I don't, maybe, you know, not so stressed out before work because some guy cut me off or, you know, it's raining and pouring and, you know, people and so there's a car accident that I have to go around or, you know, something like that. Why are people scared of self-driving cars? I don't understand that. It would make drunk driving impossible. Anyway, thanks for hearing me out. Love the show. And keep on keeping on.
So he really just wants to enjoy a Bloody Mary on the way to work.
Right. I mean, the answer to his question, when will this happen, is when he can afford a limo driver.
Or sneak your flask of vodka and your McDonald's sandwich onto BART, onto the bus, you know. And
he makes a good point. I mean, trust me, we all want to see the self-driving car. We all want the
There's tons of people, I bet, in the chat room right now who are still, I don't want to see a self-driving. You can pull the steering wheel out of my cold, dead hands. No self-driving. I've gotten these emails before whenever we talk about this. People hate the idea of self-driving cars. Well, I love it.
Well, I know. There's two types of people in the world. Those that hate their commute and those that love the open road.
Right.
So there's room for everyone.
I like both. I like driving on the open road, just not to work.
I know. Yeah. I know. We did get a lot of comments about the cars that are being equipped with tactile feedback for the blind. And this one comes from Rodney in Raleigh, North Carolina. He said, I'm wanting to comment on Becky noting that she'd be worried as a pedestrian about the blind driving cars. Just curious if any thought has been put towards what a blind person using a tactile driving. What it's like for blind people who fear silent hybrids, or worse yet, silent hybrids being driven by texting nitwits. As most blind individuals feel, hybrids need a mandatory sound.
Yeah, because when the engine kicks off and you're waiting at a stoplight and then you go, there's no sound.
This has happened to me so many times where I'm in a parking lot and I'm like, startled by the fact that there's a large moving object next to me.
We joked on Buzz Out Loud a few years ago about having car tones for hybrids that would sound like motors or even just play jingles.
Dude, we have those in Oakland. They're the whistles on the front.
Totally. We do. We're way ahead of the game in Oakland. You're totally right. Yeah. And then you'll start talking about car nuts and we just want to avoid that altogether, which I think is illegal in Oakland. I don't think you're supposed to have those on your
car. Do we have a law? Do we have the laws?
A lot of communities have laws about those now. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Ray from Long Island wrote to TNT at twit.tv, said, hey, Tom, if you think that recording a short clip of a movie solely for personal use is fair use, let me give you this example. On Broadway, they don't allow photos of the stage, sets, or any portion of the performance. You are not even allowed to take photos of each other inside the theater before, during, or after the show. Note, I didn't say video. I said photo. The shortest video possible. The reason is, every day the actors and actresses go out and act their heart out to fill the theater for every single performance, and it's hard to do that when they are alternate ways to view the content. While movies are only filmed once, they are only available in theaters to start out, and during that time, movies should be accorded a similar right. While I do feel a couple of nights in jail is way too much, to say that it's fair use would imply that the content is readily available. Seeing a movie while it is still in theaters does not give you a personal license to any of the content, and it's not fair use because you can't get it anywhere else legally. While I think it should have stopped at her deleting the videos, I think it would be inappropriate to let her leave with the video still on the phone. Love the show, guys.
Okay, all I want to say is, how would you feel if someone stole some of that dramatic reading and used it for other purposes, Tom Merritt?
My dramatic reading is Creative Commons licensed. Feel free to take it. I don't know how Ray feels about the email, though, so you may have to negotiate separately with him. Now, okay, Ray brings up a good point that I want to respond, and I think it still is fair use, because what Ray is defending is that you would undermine the commercial basis, that people wouldn't go see the movie or they wouldn't go see the play because you have taken these pictures. And I agree that that needs to be protected. I feel the same way. But I don't think, here's where I differ. I don't think that 80 seconds of Twilight on a phone at low resolution is going to undermine the ability to go see the movie. I don't think anyone's not going to go see the movie or a play for that matter because you took a picture of each other inside the theater. That's where I think these laws are way over the line. Is fair use is to say, like, hey, I'm doing something that doesn't hurt anything else. It doesn't hurt anyone else. And so I just disagree with Ray on how damaging those videos are in this case. But I agree in principle with what he's trying to defend.
In one case, I mean, I think you and I are both very pro-business. So we're not like going to just say, come on, leave the poor lady alone. Leave anybody who takes a picture. Or the, you know, we're not going to go to that extreme. But I would also say that this is about the law and about the precedent. And I think that you it's a tough call to make these distinguishing, you know, to distinguish between time frame and, you know, the law has to catch up to what's happening.
Absolutely.
And the precedent of, okay, well, you know, well, if we let that person off, then how is that any different from a guy with a full length movie on his camcorder?
When we and there is a difference, and that needs to be discussed. That needs to be delineated, what that difference is, because when we had Jay Sperling Reich on last week, you know, he said, well, but I don't know that that is legal. And my point was, it's, to me, it's not about what is and isn't legal now. It's what should be legal. Mm-hmm. You know, what should be protected to allow for creativity balanced against, you know, the ability to conduct your creative business the way you want to. And I think right now we're out of balance.
Well, I agree, but I also think that fair use is this blanket that we put on everything that we want to kind of borrow.
Yeah, but you know what? Fair use doesn't protect you from anything. While we say, oh, I wish there was more, there's a lot of fair use, and you can say like, oh, anything I want to borrow, I'll just say it's fair use. Most of the time, the things that are fair use don't get used that way because you're afraid of being prosecuted because the law isn't clear. So I agree with you. The law needs to catch up.
Right.
And be clear about, you know what? We're not undermining anybody by taking 80 seconds of a movie on a phone for my personal use.
That's fine, but don't call it fair use because that's not what the law is intended to be. The law is, I used to call fair use the Siskel and Ebert law. If you're using a piece of material in order to make commentary about it, give it the thumbs up or the thumbs down, then that's fair use. You're making a
critique.
That's
one factor,
right?
But that's not all of them.
No, but I think that it's not a blanket that just falls over everything. This is our first fight.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, it's exciting.
It's not much of a fight.
Oh, I know.
We'll do better next time.
I know.
All right. Thanks, everybody. If you would like to have your email dramatically read, email TNT at twit.tv. You can give us a call and read it yourself, 260-TNT-SHOW, or visit us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. We'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody.